What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Nigel Savage, the founder and president of Hazon, the Jewish organization dedicated to food sustainability and healthful eating and agriculture. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Spring is definitely here now, and Passover is absolutely over. And as we returned our home kitchen to its year-round chametz status, we discovered, as we do every year, that we had lots of boxes of uneaten matzah. You know, you buy the 5 pounds of boxes of matzah because it's a much better deal as a package. And you need a couple of boxes for Seder anyway, and then you end up at the end of Passover with 1 or 2 boxes left. Just when you really don't want to see matzah again for a very long time. So what to do? Just how do you use up all those boxes of the unleavened bread of intestinal affliction? Well, to play us in this morning, in her now semi-classic song, singer Michelle Citrin tells you 20 things you can do with matzah after Passover is over.
Passover's over, and wouldn't it be neat if you could use all the matzah that you didn't eat? Catch it like a frisbee with your friends in the park, or you could jump in the water and pretend you're a shark. You can make a matzah pick and play the guitar, and you can make a matzah license plate for your car. Make a little matzah board and wave it goodbye, or you can make a pair of matzah wings and learn how to fly. Wear some matzah jewelry, make a picture frame for me, have a drink of matzah tea. Matzah's all that I can see. There's just one more thing to do with unleavened bread. You can eat it, 'cause it ain't all that bad.
That was Michelle Citrin's 20 Things to Do with Matzah After Passover's Over. If Passover is over, as it is, that means we're now in the period of the counting of the Omer, the time between Pesach, the festival of freedom, and Shavuot, the holiday of covenant and Torah. For the 7 weeks between Passover and Shavuos, we take a few moments each evening to say a blessing and count the days that lead us towards a reaffirmation of our Brit, our covenant with God, that was certified at Mount Sinai. As the passage in Proverbs says, teach us to number our days so that we can make every day count. The counting of the Omer reminds us that we have the capacity to make every single day matter, to bring holiness into our lives daily. In the Sfirat HaOmer, the prayer that we chant each night, there's a famous passage, Sheyebuneh Beis HaMikdash, may the temple be rebuilt speedily in our day. It's a classic text, but more than that, it's a metaphor for what we wish in our own lives at this time of year. May we continually seek to rebuild ourselves. And if we can do that, maybe we can rebuild our world. Sheyebone Beis HaMikdash, as sung by cantor Ben Sion Miller.
Sheyebone Beis HaMikdash, Imeru ve'yomenu, Tisein chelkenu besorosecho. Oh,
That was Shayabana Beis Hamikdash. A classic concert piece is sung by Chazan Ben Sion Miller, a true cantorial tenor, for the period of the counting of the Omer. That's the agriculturally oriented period of time and of dedication that we have now entered on the Jewish calendar. In biblical times, up until the destruction of the Second Temple by the Romans in the year 70, we Jews were farmers, herdsmen, and keepers of orchards and vineyards. After a hiatus of 1,800 years or so, we returned to the land in Israel and again became connected in a tangible way to the natural world. But the agricultural element in our heritage has always remained there in the Torah, and in our prayers, and in our festival rituals. Yet we have become less and less connected to the earth and its produce over the centuries. Even in Israel today, fewer and fewer Israelis make their living directly from the land, as they did in the settlement period of the Yishuv. The separation from the actual process of growing and harvesting means that as a people, we are disconnected from the way that God allows us to enjoy the fruit of the land. Well, in an important way, this entire Jewish year of 5775 is a time of focus on the agricultural part of our heritage. We are in the midst of the Shemitah, the sabbatical year, a time when we allow the land to rest, based on biblical commandments to do so. What does this practice mean in today's world, both here in America and in Israel itself? And how can we utilize the Shemitah to change our own lives for the better, whether or not we currently have any direct connection to the land? No one is better qualified to answer those questions than Nigel Savage, founder and president of Chazon, the excellent Jewish organization focused on food sustainability and connecting us to the natural world in meaningful and sacred ways. Meet him when we return in a few moments, right here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. He's Nigel Savage, the founder, president of Chazon, the Jewish, well, I would say it's the Jewish food sustainability and environmental organization, but that doesn't somehow capture it all, that has played such an important role in enhancing our consciousness as a country and in North American Jewry on the whole question of the way that food plays into our lives. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan. Great pleasure to be with you.
So this is a very special year. It's the Shemitah, the sabbatical year, and Chazon has created certainly the most interesting materials in use, I think, all over the country. Tell us a little bit about what Shemitah means for Chazon.
Part of the light bulb for me was in 2007. 2007 was the start of the last Shemitah year in Jewish life, the last sabbatical year. And I was reading a piece in the New York Times about chaos in Israel because of the Shemitah year, arguments relating to it between the Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox, the irreligious. And as I was reading this, I remembered reading almost exactly the same piece 7 years before. And I remember thinking, didn't you know that the Shemitah year was coming? which family that's observant gets ready for Shabbat at 5 to 6 on a Friday afternoon? And that was the point that winter in 2007 that we said, you know, when the next Shemitah year comes around in 2014 and 15, let's start a little bit of work on it now in 2007 or 8. And that's how it is that as an organization over the last few years, we've started to think about the Shemitah year. So Shemitah simply means, it means it's the seventh year and it means letting go. And all of organized Jewish life, and indeed religious life in this country, runs on a religious calendar. So Shabbat is different from a Tuesday in the most liberal Reform temple, the most extreme ultra-Orthodox one. Hanukkah is different from Seder night, is different from Yom Kippur. The only thing that wasn't different was the Shemitah year. And so we started to say, well, how could we observe the Shemitah year differently from the other 6 years of the cycle? So let me give you just a couple of very minor examples, but a couple of things that we're doing at home. The first one was that I just decided that I was buying too many books. As bad habits go, that's a very forgivable bad habit. It may be a particularly Jewish bad habit with the people of the book.
I think every single rabbi in the world is guilty of that sin.
Correct. So I decided that for the Shemitah year, I was going to try and not buy a book. And because I thought that would be so stressful, starting about 6 months before the Shemitah year, I started walking around the shelves in our apartment in New York and taking off the shelf books that I really wanted to read but actually hadn't read. And I wrapped them in newspaper without labeling them. And I figured that what I would do during the Shemitah year, if I suddenly felt this incredible urge to get a new book, I would randomly take one of these, rip the newspaper off it, and go, oh my gosh, I always wanted to read this book. Well, what's really interesting is, right now we're about 4 or 5 months into the Shemitah year, I haven't bought a single book, and incredibly, I haven't unwrapped any one of the 70 or 80 books I've got stacked up and wrapped in our apartment. What has happened, well, two things have happened. One is that, as I fully intended, the act of deciding not to buy a book during the Shemitah year reminds me that it's the Shemitah year. It just, in a very little, subtle, private, not a huge deal way, reminds me that this year is different from 6 other years in the Jewish cycle, and I like that. And the second consequence is that I'm reading books in my apartment that are totally great. And normally what would happen is somebody would send me something, I'd click on a link, I'd read a review, I'd be in a bookstore, and lo and behold, the next day something would show up from Amazon, and maybe I'd read it, maybe I wouldn't. Now, because that stream has been switched off, I'm actually enjoying the books that I've got.
You know, it's a wonderful way to remind us about the Shemitah, and we'll talk much more about the sabbatical and Chazon, the Jewish food consciousness and sustainability movement, when we come back here on Too Jewish. We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's 4 ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our 3 stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. And we are now pleased and serene to bring you an occasional feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment. Accept misfortune as blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you talk about? Do not let children play contact sports like football. These only lead to injuries and instill a violent, warlike nature. Instead, encourage your child to play peaceful games like sports doctor. And finally, if a Jewish husband is walking alone in the forest talking to himself, is he still wrong? Those were our teachings of Zen Judaism, our koans, that is koans, for the day. We welcome our Mivinan Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi, v'tirbachu v'tisa.
Tirbachu v'tisa.
We will explain it later, but let's start.
Okay, so it's the Mimuna today, a great festival, but a Moroccan Jewish festival that, you know, growing up as an Ashkenazi kid in Los Angeles, I never heard of Mimuna until I went to Israel. But rather than start with Mimuna, let's talk about the Moroccan Jewish community from which it came. A very ancient community, goes back more than 2,000 years to Roman times. The Moroccan Jews have, you know it better than anybody, a deep and very rich culture. Talk a little bit about what Moroccan Jewry is and their experience in coming to Israel.
So the Moroccan Jewry, like, came, most of the you know, people who made Aliyah from Morocco did it, like, not legally. It wasn't legally.
Legal to leave Morocco.
No,
right?
It wasn't legal to leave. You know, there were gaps between, like, I would say 48 to 62, that the
people
Jewish
came,
could come legally, but the majority of the time, so people came out of a deep love to Israel. And some of them left, like, you know, their houses, businesses. The Jewish in Morocco, I wouldn't say all of them, but they were prosper.
Like, they were prosper.
It was a very prosper Jewish community.
And a pretty large community, something like 500,000, 600,000 Jews in Morocco, they think, in the 1940s to 50s.
Yeah, and now there is only 5,000 more,
right. Jews. Mostly in Casablanca,
yes.
And a little bit in other places, Marrakesh.
But anyway, the Jewish Morocco, as you know by now, has a great food and a great traditions. And they really love to celebrate every occasion, like mainly Jewish holidays. And they create for each Jewish holiday, there is a Moroccan special addition, I would say.
Uh-huh.
So the Mimuna, it's very special for Passover, which is one of the explanations that I didn't mention last week when we talked, is to keep the blessing of and the special mood of Passover, of, you know, it's the great holiday
of freedom and liberation.
Yes. So to keep this and to, you know, like we are trying to stretch the Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same, the Melaveh Malkah. So it's the same to stretch
stretch Passover.
But to switch the matzot with much...
much tastier things than matzah.
Yes, and to keep everything is sweet.
Candied fruits and sweet,
yeah,
nuts.
And Passover is, by the way, Passover is one of the four... Rosh Hashanah, right?
For New Year's, right?
So for New Year's, so it's to start again. You know, Jewish need so many chances during the year, so to start another, to give another chance to open the year with sweetness. And by the way, it was a great opportunity in Morocco to another great opportunity to solve conflict between families. That's why the tradition is that you are welcome to any houses, any homes, even though for one that you had a conflict with, you are welcome during the Mimuna, and you don't need invitation, and that's how you solve conflict and start, and, you know, another start. First start with your neighbor, with your someone who, whatever, that you had a conflict with. Did you understand me?
I did indeed. A beautiful lesson from the Mimuna, which is coming up this afternoon at Temple Emmanuel.
Yes.
At what time?
2 p.m.
2 p.m., 225 North Country Club Road. Just come. It's wonderful, a great celebration.
Learn more about Jewish tradition in Israel and the Moroccan tradition, and you will be able to taste it, to hear music, and to have great fun.
Thanks so much, Oshrat. Tirbachu v'tisadu.
Amen.
Mimuna arrives this afternoon, and we would be remiss if we failed to include some Moroccan Jewish music on the day of this wonderful festival drawn from that great Moroccan Jewish tradition. Here is Halavai, perhaps the best-known song of the Jews of North Africa and Israel, as sung by Boaz Sharabi.
Halavai, ume'anan tered aleinu keshet. Halavai, שלעולם הזה יש תקנה. הלוואי ליום יצמח מתוך סופה גועשת, הלוואי ולא תובד לעד המתנה. הלוואי שהמדבר יצמיח עשב ושת, הלוואי ועוד נשב בצל התנה. שלא נכאה ואיש אחיו יואר, הלוואי ויפתחו שוב שערי גן עדן, הלוואי ויתמזגו מזרח ומערב, הלוואי הלוואי ונחדש ימינו כאן כתבן. הלוואי ולא יישא עוד גוי אל גוי חרב, הלוואי ולא ננטוש את דרך התקווה, הלוואי והאדם יהיה רחום עד הערב, הלוואי שיש סיכוי אחד לאהבה, הלוואי שלא נכאב ואיש אחיו יאהב, הלוואי ויפתחו שוב שערי גן עדן, הלוואי והתמזגו מזרח ומערב, הלוואי, הלוואי, ונחדש ימינו כאן כקדם.
That was Boaz Sharabi singing Halavai from Mimuna this afternoon at Temple Emmanuel.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
I must note that with all the focus on Passover the last couple of weeks, we neglected to play our traditional greeting to the new baseball season. It began last week. This is the wonderful version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, performed by Mandy Patinkin in Yiddish. Of course.
Nimm mich mit zu der Ballgame, zu eurem Lommerdorf-Game. Kauf mir den Nisloch und Cracker-Jack, will ich kein Mul von dort nicht weg. Gibt's ein Mut, die Ballspieler, es passt nicht, als man verspielt. Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Steigs neus bei der Baseballspiel.
That was Mandy Patinkin's wonderful version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game in Yiddish for the start of the baseball season. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been tracing the history, ideology, the development of anti-Semitism over the course of the last few weeks, last several weeks, I should say. We got past the blood libel and some of the medieval demonstrations of anti-Semitism. Let's move it up from the last period when the sort of holistic Catholic Church, which had its own divisions, ceased to be so whole, and come up to the Reformation.
Okay, so we're going to intentionally skip the Crusades and the Inquisition, which
we don't have time.
So let's move on to the 16th century, when Protestantism was born officially anyway, and the Catholic Church risked losing a large percentage of its adherents, its resources, its property, etc., in Europe. It was quite alarmed, and it viewed the Protestant Reformation as a revolution, a huge threat. It tried its hardest to blame the Jews for this as well. So the Reformation, in some ways, unleashed new torrents of anti-Semitism, both from the Catholic Church and from the newly minted Protestants themselves, who in some cases saw that Jewish bankers or financiers or advisors were advising Catholic princes and regents and rulers, or were lending them money to fight the new disease of Protestantism as it was seen by the Catholics. So you know as well as I that this period led to at least 100 years of religious warfare in Europe between Christians, between newly emerging Protestants and old line Catholics. And the Catholic Church tried hard to contain the damage and do some, you know, risk management. But the result nonetheless was a division of Western Europe's Christians into Protestants of many different stripes and Catholics. And this is a division which, I mean, you know, in our country, Catholics are a minority and Protestants are the majority. But in France, it's exactly the opposite. And there are people I know, like quote unquote good Frenchmen, who would never set foot in a Protestant church, which they refer to as a temple, not a church. They reserve the word église for a Catholic church, which is a real church, and they refer to both synagogues and Protestant churches as temples, which is like a pagan temple, a temple to an alien religion. The Protestant Reformation in some ways led to the Enlightenment in the 18th century, which led to both the American Revolution and the French Revolution, which eventually yielded citizenship rights for Jews, first in France and then in other countries on the continent, and led to what many historians call, with some degree of correctness, I think, the emancipation. And I'd like to talk next week about the effects of emancipation on anti-Semitism in Europe.
We will indeed. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from poet Ruth Brin. The garments of the high priest were of such beauty, the jewels so radiant they dazzled the people. Daily in the sanctuary he made sacrifices to the Lord of the lamb and the bull, the dove and the little cakes. To the shepherds and farmers who brought the sacrifices, these were the means of life. Thus they proclaimed their willingness to give life itself to their God. In all ages, at all times, people have traded value for value. But for those who love God, the only sufficient gift is the symbol of life. Teach us, God, the spirit of sacrifice, how to devote our lives to our highest ideals. That was from poet Ruth Brin. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Abe had done very well in business and amassed a small fortune. Now he was looking to create the most unique and spectacular bar mitzvah ever for his son David. But what should it be? He dismissed the idea of a bar mitzvah safari to Africa. Too many families already did it. And then, after some investigation, Abe was sure he had it. He would rent a spaceship, and David would be the first bar mitzvah space boy. He started on the plans immediately, made arrangements with a company for the space flight, sent out invitations, and of course a press release. In due course, the spaceship took off with family and friends aboard, and the rabbi, of course. When they returned, the media was there in force to find out just how this first bar mitzvah journey into space had gone. The first person off the shuttle was Bubby, the grandma. "So, how was the space bar mitzvah service, Grandma?" asked the Jewish Chronicle reporter. "Okay," she replied. "And how was your grandson David's speech?" "Okay." "Well, the reporters weren't getting what they wanted, so how was the food?" they asked. "Okay." "Well, everything was just okay with the space bar mitzvah? Why aren't you more enthusiastic? What went wrong?" And the Bubby of the space boy bar mitzvah said, "There was no atmosphere." Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And don't say that joke was out of this world. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the double portion of Tazria Metzora in the book of Leviticus, and a wholly unappetizing set of Torah portions it is indeed. Metzora in particular focuses on the question of leprosy, a dread disease of the ancient world, but mostly an archaic and pretty disgusting section to us today. It's true that leprosy was an awful thing and needed to be eliminated if at all possible, in particular by using the concept of quarantines to isolate it. But exploring what our ancestors believed to be an infectious disease at great length during a Sabbath service can scarcely be called a spiritually meaningful experience. The rabbis of our tradition recognized this problem long ago and came up with an ingenious and meaningful reinterpretation. The word metzorah, which means leprosy, was itself, they said, an abbreviation for the term in Hebrew motzi shem ra, which means slander or evil speech. You know, there's a legal concept in American jurisprudence called the fruit of the poisoned tree, which rules out the use of any evidence collected illegally. That is, any discovery gathered in such a way that it is tainted is not legally admissible. So it is in Judaism with metzorah and all other forms of lashon hara, evil speech. Whether the gossip has elements of truth in it or not, it is derived from a fundamentally corrupted source. Our moral goal in life should be to completely eliminate from our lives and habits motzi shem ra, the awful tendency we have to speak ill of others. Commit no slander and your own life will be clean from this moral illness. By purifying our speech of words that are damaging to others, we can find our way clear to living better, holier lives. In the portion this week, it even delineates forms of metzorah that affect the very houses in which we live, called metzorah bayit. If a house is badly enough infected with this leprosy of the property, it may even need to be destroyed. This is along the lines of Abraham Lincoln's concept that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so, if we wish to have not only personal lives, but organizations, synagogues, and communities in which holiness can flourish, the dreadful sin of slander must be eliminated as well. May we each do our part, now and always, to remove Mitzorah, personal impurities of speech, from our own lives. You know, the sabbatical year is also about purifying ourselves from experiences that don't elevate our souls. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, founder and president of Chazon, Nigel Savage, will help us explore the sabbatical year, the Shemitah, in new and intriguing ways. We'll be back soon here on Too Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
For the seventh year in a row, President and Mrs. Obama hosted a Passover Seder this past week at the White House for Jewish staff members and administrative aides, recalling the Israelites' arduous journey from slavery in Egypt to liberation in the Promised Land. The president said that the Seder had inspired generations of Americans in the struggle for civil rights. Echoing the responses of any number of Israeli officials, Israel's Defense Minister Moshe Ya'alon called the newly signed preliminary nuclear agreement with Iran an historic mistake. However, he went on to say that not only was there still time to make the necessary changes in the document before the June 30th deadline for its final approval, the agreement would not hamper either security or the friendship between Israel and the United States, which was as strong as ever. According to a Pew Research Center report, 20 years from now, by the year 2035, the Muslim population in the United States will be greater than the Jewish population in this country as a result of the rate of intermarriage among Jews and a declining birth rate. The report estimates the current Jewish population to be anywhere from 5.7 to 6 million. However, in arriving at its conclusions, the researchers only listed those who identified themselves as Jewish by religion. It did not include those who said that they were Jews culturally or non-practicing. Omissions which not only make the survey misleading numerically, but convey a total misunderstanding of the meaning of Jewish identity and commitment, both historically and certainly today. In what can only be called the first of its kind in the Arab world, Israel's neighbor, the country of Jordan, now boasts a Center for Israel Studies. Located in the city of Amman, the center seeks to combat media misrepresentations about Israel and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by issuing reports and analyses that embrace objective and neutral points of view, thereby countering the standard diet of biased anti-Israel propaganda, which is the only information available to the average Arab man and woman in the Arab press and television. The center is funded solely by voluntary contributions. This Wednesday, April 15th, will mark the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp by American soldiers in 1945. It will be commemorated by a special concert to be held in London featuring the well-known Yiddish singer Berta Kahan. Born and raised in Norway by her father, a Bergen-Belsen survivor, and her mother, who was able to escape to Sweden. Ms. Kahan is a graduate of Tel Aviv School for Performing Arts as well as the American Musical and Dramatic Academy of New York City. Today, she, her husband, and children live in Poland, in the city of Wrocław, better known as Breslau, where she is the founding director of its Center for Jewish Culture and Education. Reflecting on her life and her experiences, she says, "I want to fight for a Europe that is safe for every Jew to live in. Otherwise, it would be like Hitler's winning again 70 years later." And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Nigel Savage is the founder and president of Chazon, the organization that cultivates, I use that word advisedly, consciousness of food sustainability and the natural world, and has produced really by far the best materials on the sabbatical, the Shemitah year, which we're in the midst of now. Nigel, earlier you talked about how you gave up books for the Shemitah to increase your consciousness of the sabbatical year, how it's a different year. I understand you also gave up, this sounds sort of heretical, scotch. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yes. So I didn't exactly give up scotch. It's more entertaining than that. I was thinking about the fact that one of the prohibitions on Shemitah is about growing grain on an industrial scale. You could grow some grain, but only for you and your family and only till it ran out. And again, I was really interested in finding a way that would, in a sense, remind us that it was the Shemitah year. And again, very randomly, without putting a lot of thought into it, I decided that we wouldn't buy any liquor during the Shemitah year. Now, this is kind of a sort of Marie Antoinette let him eat cake story, because it didn't preclude us, for example, from buying either wine or beer. So it's not as if we're suddenly about to be a dry household. But what's been really interesting is we had a certain kind of liquor cabinet. We had a bunch of bottles of scotch and some single malts and a few other things. In general, and I don't drink that much liquor, but in general, I drink scotch. And so, first of all, our sort of supplies of scotch have been going down. But secondly, we're sort of drinking through all this other stuff, a bottle of vodka and two bottles of tequila. There's a bottle of absinthe in there. Like, what is absinthe and where did we get that from? And it's just a really interesting and fun thing to see our sort of liquor cabinet going down. Will it last out the year? Will it get to August and I'm saving the last few drops of scotch for me and not offering them to guests when they come over? It's another small way that we've been able to have a sense of Shemitah and also to share it with friends in an entertaining way.
So a way to increase consciousness of what? Limitation? Our commitment to the natural world? All of the above.
So Chazon is an organization, the organization that I run, really works to try and create a healthier and a more sustainable Jewish community and to try and enable the Jewish community to create a more sustainable world for everybody. But the question is, what does that mean? So one of our theme quotes is something that I heard from a great rabbi 20 years ago, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach. And Rabbi Kalbach said, the Torah is a commentary on the world, and the world is a commentary on the Torah. What I take that to mean is that too often we have one little bucket which is kind of Jewish. That's to do with synagogue and temple and bar and bat mitzvah. I do keep kosher, I don't keep kosher over there. And on the other hand, the rest of my life, my career, my profession, what my kids are doing, all that kind of stuff. And we're really interested in building much deeper relationships between Jewish tradition and the world we live in and going back and forth. So for example, so one of the things that's going on in the Shemitah stuff is that we are a little bit over-consuming the world. We kind of know that on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's a little bit dispiriting to think about that. And Shemitah is just interesting because it comes along 1 year in seven just to encourage us to let go of a few things. And so the notion of doing something that on the one hand represents no real deprivation, truthfully, for us as a family. Secondly, it actually lets us appreciate that which we have a bit better. And thirdly, it causes us to reduce our footprint on the Earth just a little bit. And it sort of increases and broadens my sense of being Jewish. To put all that together is really cool. Let me give you a very, very different example that's very material to the time that we're now in. As kids, we tend to think of Purim, Pesach, Passover, and Shavuot, to the extent that we think about them at all, as totally different things. Purim is dressing up, reading the Megillah, the kids running riot, fancy dress, we're not quite sure what.
Lots of plays.
Saturday night, eating matzah, singing songs, and spilling wine on the tablecloth. And Shavuot is receiving the Torah and something to do with cheesecake. We're not quite sure. I think that deeply understood within the tradition, I think these three things really connect to each other much more profoundly. And I think the heart of understanding this period is Seder night. Seder night is the night that I myself go free. It's the night that I leave the narrow places. And after I'm free, we then start this 49-day meditation, the period from Pesach to Shavuot, counting the Omer, which is thinking about the nature of freedom in our lives. But the question is, how do we get to Seder night? How do we start that journey of freedom? And it starts with Purim. And I think that the reason that by tradition we get drunk on Purim and we put on fancy dress and we wear costumes is that the tradition, I think, is inviting us to think about what are the masks that we wear? Who is my real self? And what are the masks that I wear that obscure that? And it's kind of shaking us up. And the reason it's shaking us up is because I think that Purim is the starting bell for Pesach. And properly understood, the day after Purim, the way that we prepare to be free in Jewish tradition is by getting rid of stuff. And the traditional Jewish housewife, our grandmother, our great-grandmother, who tipped the kitchen upside down to get rid of chametz, right, to get rid of fermented bread and beer and so forth. Hidden in plain sight, I think, is this notion that by getting rid of stuff, we liberate ourselves and we start the journey to freedom. And I would certainly say to anybody listening to this right now, certainly if this is the lead up to Pesach, if you're in the midst of kashering your kitchen and getting rid of your beer and eating your bread and drinking your scotch, that's a great thing to do. But now is absolutely a great time also to just clear out the closet, the garage, the clothes you never wear, the kids' toys you don't need. Just give it away, throw it away, take it to work, take it to Goodwill. The process of doing that will actually literally lighten your home, lighten your life, and then you get to enjoy Seder night in a deeper kind of a way.
You know, Pesach, and as you mentioned, the process of leading up to Shavuot are always considered connected to agriculture and the natural world. And in the period of the counting of the Omer, from Passover all the way up to Shavuot, we're supposed to take a moment each day, count the Omer, count the day. But we don't make any grain offerings and haven't for more than, 1900 and some years. What ways could we perhaps utilize, say, the Omer as a function of the sabbatical this year?
So it's a great, great question. The first thing I would say is that one of the great gifts of the tradition right now is there is nothing that we have to do. So it's an open question for each person. There's a strong tradition of counting the Omer. There's a rabbi called Rabbi Simon Jacobson, who was the amanuensis of the late Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was one of the people who used to write down the Lubavitcher Rebbe's talks after Shabbat. And he has a website called Meaningful Life Center. And they have great stuff about the Omer, and they send out kind of like a meditation every day, offering a directed question. And I have done that, or versions of that, in previous years. I like this notion of measuring the passage of time, and I like the notion of using it in some subtle way to think in this case about the nature of freedom. Look, at the end of the day, thank God, we're not living in Stalinist Russia. We're not living in Nazi Germany. In one sense, we live in a time of very, very great freedom. And yet, in a different sense, to some extent, we all enslave ourselves. And we enslave ourselves in different ways. And some of us enslave ourselves to cigarettes, and some of us enslave ourselves to money or porn or clothes, or it could be any number of things. And I think that this period from Pesach to Shavuot, it's a great time to give oneself the opportunity to write every day, to meditate every day, to do something kind to somebody else every day. For each person, it may be something slightly different, but 7 weeks is kind of nice. It's a delineated period. It's not necessarily forever. You can try something out for 7 weeks, but it's a little bit longer than like, oh, I'm just going to do this on Tuesday.
It's really impressive when you think about the discipline that's built into it, the tradition, and yet some of it falls by the wayside in a very different setting. Is there anything that you see that the sabbatical can create that's permanent in our lives, that this Shemitah, using this year, what can we do that will make a permanent distinction?
Yes. Well, I don't know about permanent, but let me suggest this, both for an institution, a synagogue, a Jewish day school, a camp, but also for a place of work, a business, a law firm, a family, a radio show. One of the gifts of the Shemitah year, I think, is looking back and looking forwards. So one of the things that we've been thinking about is 2022 vision. There is a 7-year period in Jewish life that's going to begin at Rosh Hashanah this fall in September of 2015, that's going to end the day before Rosh Hashanah in September of 2022. So the next 6 months is a really great opportunity to start to think about what would we like our synagogue to look like in 2022? How many families would we like it to have? Would we like it to grow by 50%? How inclusive would we like it to be? Would we like to develop a food policy, not just a kashrut policy, but a wider policy about what food do we serve? Where does it come from? How are the workers treated? How are the animals treated? How is the land treated? Do we grow any of our own food? Do we compost it? What about bar and bat mitzvah? What about an interfaith piece? What about the farm bill? The notion of spending 6 months thinking with friends or family members or board members, what's our vision for 2022? Where do we want to get to over the next 7 years? And how are we going to get from A to B? That may or may not be permanent in the sense in which you said it, but that's more than transient for sure. That's about using the gift of the Jewish calendar to help us to think in a slightly longer time frame.
I want to thank Nigel Savage for a great visit here on Too Jewish. There's a fantastic publication that you guys have on the Shemitah, as well as many other bits of information. I think the website is chazon.org, H-A-Z-O-N.org.
That's correct. Tons of material there. If you're at all interested, go to chazon.org, and indeed you can put your email in there. We will not inundate you, but then you'll be in touch in the future.
Not inundated, just a selectively find your life enhanced in this area. Nigel, thank you again for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Continued success in cultivating the great work that Chazon does and the food conference and all the wonderful work you've been doing on the Shemitah year.
Thank you very, very, very much indeed. It's been a very, very great pleasure to be on the show.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out here on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Mona Golubek, founder, author, and concert pianist, the writer of The Children of Willesden Lane, and the pianist of Willesden Lane. A fascinating story of her grandmother, the pianist, and how she passed on the gift of music even as she was headed to the gas chambers. Our playout this morning comes from the Mimuna Festival at the end of Passover, celebrated at Temple Emmanuel this very afternoon. Call 327-4501 for more information. This is from the Moroccan Jewish tradition, Claude Afota, singing Toi et Moi. you and me. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Toi et moi, nous venions du Nord d'Afrique, et Zama.